This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, athlete!
Absolutely not.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Oh my god. Oh. What just happened? I heard that and I'm in the UK. Wow.
That's one take.
So glad that's recorded and that we have that available.
I can go louder
if we need.
No,
I don't think we do.
You sure we don't need to do it again?
No, I'm pretty sure we're good.
I would like to hear it again.
We're in. We're in.
Liv's saying we need to hear it again.
Halflings, it's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Hello, that was basic in comparison to Jeremy's. My name
is... Jeremy's doesn't exist because we cut it out. It's not in the episode.
We'll talk to Daniel, it's fine. Hi, I'm Olivia Kennedy, but you can call me Liv.
And
Jeremy Cobb, but you can call me Daniel. Please leave that in. It was great. But also, Ivy.
You've absolutely just fried the hell out of your mic. It will sound, not only will it sound bad, even if you had the right equipment, but it will just it'll just go quiet. Like,
no.
I don't know. This mic can take a lot of abuse.
Yeah,
I feel like it's just going to be bricked out.
Don't worry about it.
In fact, looking at it on here, it just looks really bricked out. I think we're gonna be fine.
Completely bricked up. We'll see.
Maybe for the Patreon cut.
I think if anything, it should be the other way around. We should say
an exclusive non-screech version available on Patreon.
if you want the ear bleed free version. Mm-hmm. But Ivy calls me Raid Shadow Legends Cobb.
just a shameless plug for Raid Shadow Legends. Absolutely incredible. Love it so much. We are joined by an extra special guest today. Very exciting guest. Kind of like I would probably say, you know, up there on a sort of three black halflings kind of pedestal, a great, if you will. Someone who has done a lot for the industry, especially when it comes to promoting people of color and all of our sweet work. So I would like to introduce
a hero.
I will preface this by saying that our guest specifically asked us not to be too hype, and so we are actively choosing violence in this scenario.
We did wake up and choose
our violence takes the form of compliments and acknowledgement of your accomplishments.
Absolutely it does. So please welcome to Three Black Halflings award winning game designer for both Harlem Unbound and The Haunted West and various Chaosium projects, my lifelong friend who I have slayed many, many dragons with.
And my dad.
Jeremy's dad. It's Chris Spivey. Welcome to the Thrush Show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. I will point out.
Now, Chris, I have to ask.
I fed you that
is
line.
Is that the strangest intro you've ever had?
No, it is not.
Okay, good.
Oh, wow. Okay, we'll take it.
I can tell you when I lived in... Jesus, where was that? I've moved around so much. Never mind. I will share that story. That may be a Patreon story, not for your general listeners. If that's okay. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, oh my god! Okay. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. Yeah. Very, very excited to have you on. We had the absolute pleasure of playing Harlem Unbound last year with a wonderful friend of the show, London Carlisle, and it was just it was brilliant and so amazing.
Much
so
fun. So
much appreciated for all of your work.
London is incredible. But I think, and I may have listened to that and may have squeed the whole time.
Oh, hey! Oh, that's cool.
You're
going to
make
that's,
me squeeze. Oh my God.
I'm so glad that I'm not aware of who's going to listen to stuff when we yeah. record them. You know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like I'd be so much more conscious of my performance if I was aware of, like,
oh, do you have any notes? Do you have any notes, Chris?
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. We can stop recording and you can just give us a
note. Please, just tear it apart, please.
Yeah. You got to do it with London. London is so incredible that any notes I would have given you, he's likely already given you and come up with.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
So true. And he's a real harsh critic. Long list of criticism.
Yeah, no, yeah, he told absolutely. Us specifically to pipe the fuck down several times during the recording.
We had that was the thing we had to edit the most was the yeah. number yes. of times that he stopped yes. the recording and said, "I'm about to walk. I'm about to walk.
I'm fucking done." So if you make one more crack, oh, I'm done.
Yeah,
we're just
well,
kidding.
Well, I think. Speaking of stories that we can't share or maybe won't share, why don't we go ahead and do a little lore dump before we get into this episode properly? Because who doesn't love a good lore dump? Mm. If anyone is new to the show, a lore dump is a little segment that was invented by Erica Ishii. And the idea is that we will share a like 2 to 3 sentence max little tidbit of information about our past. But the catch is that no one on this Zoom is allowed to ask any follow-up questions. Nope. Not one. And it is painful.
I would like to point out
there has been some absolute doozies on here.
I'd like to point out that you woke up this morning and chose violence. So be prepared.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We're in a weird little mood.
does anyone have any just in a weird little mood. Title of the episode, weird little mood. does anyone have a lore dump teed up that they want to share with us?
I have one.
Let's go, Liv. What do you got?
Sure. I was once exploded on a film set.
Yeah, okay. That was a good one. Yeah. Okay. That was a solid one.
Okay, yeah. That's decent. That's decent. All right. Man.
Because I was stressing myself out, you know, because I was like, okay, what's happened in my life? I don't know. Yes. Carry on.
But that's a good one. I like Thank that. You. Jeremy, go.
And I may have actually mentioned this before, but there exists on YouTube a video of me playing on stage with the lead singer of Walk the Moon, who are most famous for the song Shut Up and Dance from the 2010s, big hit from the 2010s, as well as all three members of the band Public, who are most famous for their TikTok hit song Put Your Hand in Mine. Melody's like, put your hand in mine. Yeah. I was on stage performing with all four of those people. And there is a video of that on YouTube.
Yeah. I've seen the video. It exists.
Dig it out. Mm-hmm. Dig it out. I'll jump in and we'll save Chris for last because mine is also YouTube related. There is a video online of me doing my first ever stand-up set and my last ever stand-up set. Never did one afterwards. This was back when I was in secondary school / high school for Americans.
Is this a name change as well?
This is no, I'm not gonna tell you that, Jeremy, because then you might find it. You can't ask any follow-up questions, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
sir,
exactly. You broke the one rule, Jeremy.
You broke the rules.
Yeah.
Chris, me, just navigating before Jeremy interrogates this any further, because my word, I'm now terrified and in a full flop sweat that someone's gonna find this. Do you have a lore dump for us?
I once danced on a piano in a bar, singing Frank Sinatra karaoke to someone I was trying to meet.
Whoa!
And I'm not a singer. I've karaoke since college, and I am bad. But I do not have a lack of confidence when it comes to it.
Yes, get that.
But imagine that. Imagine if that was like how networking worked. Just like you wanted to meet someone, and so you have to like perform. I would love that.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just going to let anyone know that would work on me. I'm married, so it's not going to work now. Yeah. But like anyone who has the confidence to get on a piano and sing Frank Sinatra, mm-hmm. even if it was bad, I'd be like, okay, cool. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I need some of that confidence. I want to be mm-hmm. close to that confidence. Sure. If you're bad, honestly.
Yeah, if someone non-diegetically or diegetically somehow like sings to me in a bar, I'm in, you know? I'm so in.
Well, Chris, why don't we get to know you a little bit more? Because I think, you know, whilst that's a brilliant fact, we would love to know what is your nerdy origin story? When did, Chris Spivey get into all of this nerdy stuff? Like, what was the original thing for you, the original spark?
So originally, my parents put me in this pod and launched me to Earth from our dying planet. and traveled through space, and I got all my education that crashed landed outside of a small farm, and I was taken in by this family. We'll call them the Rents. And now is this story not working?
I want to hear more, please. I'm what kind of field was it?
Is it Clark Spivey or Kal-El Spivey? Sorry.
Hey!
Nice, there we go.
I would have gone with a cornfield because when it crashed, it could have had more of a big fire from the corn and did a big thing. But
yeah absolutely. Yeah, that'd be, no, I'm totally into that. Yeah.
The less cool version.
Clark, I mean Chris.
the less cool version is I grew up in a small town in Alabama called Auburn. And growing up, I didn't have a lot of friends, so I fell in love with books. And I think I bought my first gaming book when I was six or seven. Me and my one friend Jay walked across town, because that's what you could do back then, by yourselves, two kids, unaccompanied, around seven, to a game store, and I bought the red box set. And that sort of cemented me into gaming and geekdom. After that, it was sort of the Shannara books, then it became space books, then it went hardcore into comic books and superheroes.
Nice.
Yep. Okay. Nice.
Who's your favorite superhero?
Like, I was just about to. Yeah, same. Yeah. Jeremy, we're in sync.
That is a more complex question than you can imagine.
I mean, you've already mentioned Superman. So you can't vote for yourself. Sorry.
You did elect to give yourself, of all of the origin stories, you elected to give yourself the Superman.
It's true.
Origin story. So,
It's the best one. He was like the first mainstream superhero. If I had to, but for my, I'm more of a Marvel than a DC person. So
That was going to be my next question.
Spider-Man was my hero growing up, because it was on even the recent movie sort of pointed out that anyone could be under the mask. But my absolute hero is Captain America when Captain America is written right.
What would be an example of Captain America written right?
Yeah. It was absolutely.
If we go with the Civil War, how Captain America sides with the people of the U.S. and the heroes and keep their identities. Because Captain America written properly is someone that represents the country themselves, not the politicians or the power structure. So it's someone that represents the heart and spirit of what the country should be. Captain America written badly is he's a tool of the government.
I like that.
Okay. So did you then enjoy The Winter Soldier? Because I feel like that's what that movie is the most about. That and, to a lesser extent, Civil War, I guess.
My top three favorite comic book movies that I cannot figure out which one wins, depends on which day you ask me, is a Black Panther movie, because I waited a lifetime for the first Black Panther movie, Captain America Winter Soldier, and Into the Spider-Verse.
Quality top three.
That's a great top three. Honestly, Into the Spider-Verse, it makes me cry thinking about it. Like, like it's just beautiful.
Beautiful film. Yeah. Gorgeous.
I am going to ask this follow-up question for all of you. Who or what, depending on if you go with alien species, is your favorite superhero?
Who should go first?
I can ask, answer straight away. It's the same. It's the same as one you mentioned, Spider-Man, which is so ironic because I'm afraid of spiders, but I love Spider-Man.
I feel like of all of the superheroes, Spider-Man truly has like very little to do with actual spiders. He's like a spider in his life like one time, and kind of just like,
and then they all left him alone.
I'm good though. I'm not shooting spiders or anything. I'm good.
like a machine gun, but spiders come out.
Which, you know, could have been.
Yeah, I mean, could be. That would be such a weird way to present Spider-Man. I would love it. I've read some comic books when I was younger, but like the films from Sony, the Sony films,
they were the Toby and
Toby
and
Andrew
ones,
and Andrew.
Yeah, oh, I met Andrew Garfield out in London once, and he was like walking around, and then there was this like woman who was having a really intelligent conversation with him, and I was 17, and I was like, "Hello, Andrew. Hello, it's nice to meet you."
Was he like, "Are you okay?"
CPR, tries to help you.
No, I was just, I got a picture with him actually, and then I turned away for a second, and then he was gone. So like,
he swung away.
He just shot straight.
Stole my joke.
All three of us.
All three of us went in for the same joke. We were like, we have I to get
always,
in.
What's funny is I always say that as well, though. I'm like, he must have swung away. And, always... and that's, yeah, that's my fave. That's my guy.
Love it. Jeremy, what about you?
Same here. Spider-Man has always been my favorite superhero. He's just great. He's a great character.
It would be Spider-Man especially after the Spider-Verse movies, because like they have just captured my heart and soul in a way that like truly not many films have ever done. Like I love them on a fundamental level, but I just in the interest of balance, I am going to go ahead and say Nightcrawler. That character.
Okay. Excellent.
Pretty much ever since like X-Men 2, the Pentagon scene. Cool scene. Is it the White House scene? Sorry. It was I was like,
oh, so sick.
This is truly mind blowing. Like, this is the coolest dude ever. And
I still think that's a top 10 superhero movie action scene of all time, in my opinion. Oh, yeah. It's just so cool.
It's so sick. It's so unbelievably sick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, speaking of unbelievably sick things, Chris, your work is absolutely amazing. We've had the joy of playing.
As I mentioned,
in that world already.
I'm a Nubian podcaster, so I like to interrupt and segue to something else. I'm going to go back to your Alan Cumming comment and talk about how amazing Alan Cumming is. Being in like cabaret.
It's coming
you
back.
You dare compliment me?
You dare. Don't you dare compliment me?
I think you are.
No, sorry. That's it.
I think.
Oh, we just want to talk about it. Yeah. Alan, sure. Can I throw out a slight thing? I did not realize. It took me until I was, I think, around 19 or 20, maybe 21, to realize that role that I saw Alan Cumming in, which was the role of Floop in Spy Kids.
Yes!
It took me until 20 or 21 to realize that the name Finnegas Floop is so ridiculous. I never realized that was a silly name. I just accepted it. Finnegas Floop. Yeah, normal name. And there was I was like sitting in my friend's dorm room one day and I was like, wait a minute. Finnegas Floop. That's a silly name.
That's ridiculous. I mean, there's thumb men going around. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the worst of our, like the least of our problems.
I know, but the Floop thing got me. I accepted, I still can't accept the thumb men.
I'm pretty sure his like right hand is like, his last name is like Minion as well. Like I'm it's like Alex Minion or Alexander Minion or something.
Yeah, you're right.
Like it's so silly.
He calls him Minion because it's his actual name.
Because it's his actual name. Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's fair enough.
Man, I thought he was being a jerk. I frequently reference the Elijah Wood getting toasted in.
Oh my God,
way too often.
Oh my God.
It was a seminal part of my childhood. That moment. Where I was like, they got Frodo! They got Frodo! God, Frodo, no! It was really traumatic for me. So really stuck I can't remember anything else from that movie, honestly. Well, I am going to just like Spy Kids 3D.
Chris had something to say. Wait.
Oh, yes.
As we're on the Alan Cumming's podcast talk right now, do you know that he's also exceptional in Smigadoon?
Smigadoon.
I haven't actually watched past episode one of Smigadoon. I didn't realize that he's in it. Now that I know that Alan Cumming is in it, I may actually have to revisit Smigadoon. Liv, you would love Smigadoon.
It's
amazing. You would absolutely love. It's just like a normal couple travels into a musical theater like town, and it is absolutely ludicrous. And, Keegan-Michael Key is like one of the main guys.
Oh my god!
This.
Yes,
Cameron
is in it too.
It's
you got Jane.
Crazy.
I didn't hear of it until this moment.
They've got two
Kristen
seasons.
Chenoweth. Sorry, I'm looking through the cast. Sorry, Titus is in it. Oh my god! No,
Titus shows up in season two.
No. Wow. Oh, shit. Well,
and an incredible role, by the way, for Titus, too. If you... I don't know how familiar you all are with musicals.
I'm pretty familiar.
Yeah.
All musical theater kids, aren't we?
Basically, for season two, if you know Pippin and the role that Ben Vereen originally played, Titus is playing a riff on that for the season two of Schmigadoon.
Oh. Ooh. Oh, damn. Okay.
I'm excited.
I would love... Okay. Oh. Oh, God.
So head over to the Patreon for the Three Black Halflings Schmigadoon watch along.
I would show up for that. I'm just saying.
Oh, my God. Yes.
I think, honestly, a lot of people would. It would just require us all being in the same place for long enough to watch two seasons of Schmigadoon.
No, all Titus episodes, and then we're good. Yeah.
And then all Titus. Yeah, sure.
Well, and Alan Cumming. We need Alan Cumming.
Yes. Yeah, that was the whole reason.
If you would like to get on point, I can stop tangenting. Yes, I'm happy to tangent.
No, please. No,
you could ask Andy about it. I tangent all day.
I'll let you.
Yeah.
Jeremy has a question, so I'll let you jump in.
So we haven't quite gotten to how you got into the industry, but I'm going to skip ahead. What was your inspiration for Haunted West? As a show that we have done a Weird West series, Weird West actual play, I'm curious, what was your inspiration for the Haunted West setting and system?
Wow, you're gonna make me be serious now. Let me put on my gamer face.
Oh, you can still tell jokes. I just also want to know that information while the silliness happens.
Growing up, I was raised by my grandmother. She was my entire family. Like, it was me and my grandmother for my entire childhood. And one of the things that we would do is on Saturday mornings, the kid, I'd go downstairs. Well, I'd go into the other room because we live in two different houses. Longer story, but we always had one TV. And kid, I'm watching cartoons and I'm loving it. I'm in my own world. And every fucking Saturday, sorry, can I use profanity on your podcast?
Yeah, you can.
Absolutely fine. You're
please,
all good.
Please.
Great.
Every fucking Saturday. Yes.
Let me rewind. Every fucking Saturday, she would come in at 10 o'clock and switch the channel to the fucking Rifleman. And here I am. I'm like 9. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Why are we watching this?
That's a 9-year-old screaming, what the fuck is this? I really like that.
It's called an internal monologue.
You're so right.
Right. Sorry. That needs to be clarified. We thought you were swearing at your grandma, Chris.
Oh, no. I was in Alabama with an old school grandmother who was a fan of, this is something you should never do to your children. Sure. I want to establish this right now. It does not do anything to change her behavior. But she was a staunch believer in the Alabama Switch. So,
Switch.
And I don't mean the PlayStation. I mean the one.
Oh, I know what
the
it is.
The one you go get from a tree and then you proceed to hit your kids with it.
It's a big schmigadunk in our
get my
house.
Sure. I was aware of a Switch, but I was unaware of what an Alabama Switch was. I didn't know if it was slightly, you know what I mean? We were upgrading on the original, you know, I was worried for a second.
If I'm putting Alabama in front of it, it's a downgrade.
Something.
I really do like the idea, though, of like, grandma just being like, go get me my Switch, I'm about to school you in Mario Kart, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Just she just humiliates you.
Yeah. Tears you apart.
So internal monologue profanity. But I got to the point where it was something we started bonding over, actually. So us watching Westerns, we kind of started bonding. And then she would come in, a slight digression, and she'd start watching Doctor Who with me. And we watched sci-fi stuff together too.
Nice.
But it all came out of that Western bonding time for us. So within 6 months, I might have like started giving her the remote instead of trying to hide the remote as a kid.
Oh.
And that stuck with me. But even then watching it, it kept recurring to me that it was a lot of fucking white people and there were like no black people. And occasionally when a black person would show up, they would be enslaved. They might be a servant. They might be the butt of someone else's joke. There was actually one or two where Sammy Davis showed up and had a slightly better role, but it was still in sort of the same mold. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me. So I had grew up getting a love of Westerns, but that nagging feeling. And when I got older, as you may have seen now, I've gotten into something called research. And so I started researching the old West and hearing all the old stories. And I wanted to tell those stories that were actually true because a lot of them are so amazing and those people's voices have been lost that it is better than most fiction. And it gives light to what the country and the people actually were doing and what they went through. Because some of them were good people, some of them were bad people, but they're complex lives and stories that need to be told.
So are you then a big fan of like the more, I guess, modern trend of revisionist Westerns? That kind of take a different look at the way that the West was... probably the most famous ones that deal with black people would be what The Harder They Fall... Django Unchained, Hateful Eight, stuff like that.
I really enjoy Django Unchained. I have intrinsic problems, but I still like it with The Harder They Fall. because the historian.
What are your intrinsic problems with it?
The historian and person that likes actual facts.
Yeah.
If they chosen one named character and had the rest of them be just different named people and had that adventure been awesome. But that also intrinsically breaks Bass Reeves. Bass Reeves, who is so obsessed with the law and doing the right thing, he arrested his own son because he had faith that the law would do the right thing and see him through. And to have him knowing the history that he's going to arrest his own son, but you know what? I'll do some crime with you right now. My son, though, fuck that asshole. He's going down. And little things
it's
like
tough.
That.
It's tough to balance that for sure. Well, if I can cycle back just a little bit, because I'd love to dig into like how you started out in this industry, but also I guess into like writing, game design, you know, things like that. Was it something that you'd always kind of set out to do? And was it, did it come from a place of wanting to tell, you know, stories like Haunted West, for instance?
It wasn't something I really wanted to do. But I fell in love with gaming and I kept not seeing people like me or other marginalized people. And occasionally when I did, the stories weren't told with the same level of respect or care given to white characters. One of the things about me is if I don't like something, I'm going to do something to try to at least fix it or stem the tide. Yeah. So that's when
absolutely.
I grew up all of my life with Zora Neale Hurston because she's my cousin. And my aunt went to her funeral and I have like the funeral flyer from when she passed and all these other things. So that part of has always been part of my own story. And one of the things I wanted to do, because I loved Call of Cthulhu because Call of Cthulhu is steeped in history. And I encountered Lovecraft at a young age. And then I discovered the racism in Lovecraft that I felt before, but I didn't have something articulate. And I decided I wanted to combine the 1920s for Call of Cthulhu and the Harlem Renaissance, which is like this incredible time period. And the Harlem Renaissance impacted the entire world, just not America. And I pitched the idea to some different companies, one of which Chaosium. And I was told politely by several different companies that is a great sounding idea, but we don't think anyone wants to buy that or have anything to do with it.
Really? That's so interesting.
Yuck.
And
oh my word.
You know who you are. I don't know if you're listening to this, but you know.
I mean, look, the people who said that absolutely are not listening to three black authors. You know what I mean?
This is not really the show for them, I feel.
No, it's not. Because we've called them out probably by name several times during the course of the show.
Probably.
And I did what Chris is prone to do and say, fuck it, I'll just do it myself. And
yeah, absolutely.
I did it.
Yeah.
And we're very glad that you did do it.
Yeah.
So good. It's so good.
Very, very fun.
What was the process then, I guess, like, did you have a history in, like, writing? Had you written and done, like, kind of this kind of creative work before? Or was it, like, a bit of a gear change to then come into writing and then also into specifically game design? Was that something that was, like, newer to you when you did that?
As a kid, I was always drawing and writing. And the drawing fell off because I was decent. I'm not going to downgrade my skill. It was decent.
Okay.
Now I would be middling because it's been so long since I've done it, but I got more into writing and the creative process of writing I enjoyed. I was a masochist even then because writing is a pain in the ass to do and no one should have to do it and suffer for hours on end staring at a blank page and coming out with like 500 words. But
been there.
During that time, I also became an intelligence analyst for the military. So I became used to writing and researching and everything else. So the creative writing I'd already done, coupled with the intel writing and research experience, enabled me to do all the work by myself to start create kind of a pitch deck for it. So it was maybe 30 pages. It had a sampling of the scenario, some characters, general outline, and I passed it around to different companies, and that's what I got notes for. And that's when I decided I got an invite to go to Metatopia in 2014 or 2015. From AV. So that was awesome. I had been there. I didn't know what to do. And I received a random email because I'd started Dark Cruise, a company, I think in 2013, mostly just so if I got job gigs, they could send it all to one email address and it stays separate from my professional other work account.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I got a random email from someone named Brennan Reese. saying, hey, are you the Chris Spivey that went to Auburn High School? That was the full extent of the email.
No hello, you know, no goodbye. I honestly appreciate it. More people could send emails like that nowadays. That'd be great.
And I responded with a, why, yes, random internet stranger, that is I. In email. And then there was a full thing of like, hey, it's Brennan. We went to high school together. We weren't really in the same circles, and like gave background and context. In preference, in a, for as a point of reference, in future, if anyone wants to contact someone, include more of that content in the initial send. Say it.
Explain how you know them.
But he said he saw my... Yes! He said he saw my name on the Metatopia list and wanted to reach out. So we met at Metatopia, and Brennan is an incredible artist and like layout design person and everything else. And over scotches and bourbon, I told him my big vision for Harlem Unbound. And he was instantly on board, which was great because I had the creative writing, the program management, all that in the historical research part, but I did not have the layout skills to be able to do it. And so we sort of teamed up, a Batman and Robin, if you will. A Spider-Man and a Peter and Miles, if you will. I could make a couple of different one of these. We could go Bond and Moneypenny.
Nice.
I need to know who is who in these scenarios, but yeah.
Yeah. That would be great if we could get
But we have a no follow-up questions thing, right?
Only on the lore dumps.
Only on the lore dumps, technically. You know, if you want to invoke that as a lore dump, then we can no longer. Like, you can invoke the lore dump whenever you choose. And at which point, then no follow up questions.
The entire interview was a lore dump.
This whole podcast was just like, hey, no follow up questions. We will not ask you any questions. You talk and we listen. And that is it. Okay?
And that is it. That's the full hour show. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And so the two of us together. I will say that I could have made the book without Brennan, but the book would not have been at the quality and par that it is without his help and the help of the other writers and the editors and the artists and the proofreaders that became part of that team to build it. I want to point out that any project is never one person. It is a team of people composed together that make that
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, how was the collaboration process, like bringing that story to life with the help of other people? Do they like share your vision kind of thing?
I got lucky for the first version of Harlem Unbound. I had met Ruth Tillman because at the same Metatopia, I was put in contact with Kat from Pelgrin Press. And I did some freelancing work for them. I lived in D.C. Ruth lived in D.C. So we sort of met up together to talk about research for Cthulhu Confidential. So it's like a 1940s, from my game version of it, noir Cthulhu thing. And so we're at the bar. You notice a lot of my stories deal with bars. I have a
fun too. It's fine.
Thank you. I have a fondness for scotch and whiskey. So we met there and we talked for like 3 or 4 hours. And Ruth was writing the New York section. So I knew that I wanted to have Ruth on the project, and I asked if she would join it because of her research experience. She was easy to work with, and she jumped on the chance to do it. So that gave me a person with a solid foundation already of New York history, in addition to what I'd been researching. I met Neil Raymond Price at Metatopia also, and I'm going to say conned my way into some Onyx Path work because I didn't have a lot of credits yet. And I asked Neil to join up because Neil has a very certain voice that I wanted to get for parts of the book to invoke in it. And Neil jumped on board for it. And a lot of the story works like mostly like that. Everyone I went to was very engaged with the idea and the thought of it. And we made it. And it's great.
Yeah,
getting that buy-in at the beginning of a creative project, I think, can be quite huge. You know, I think that I've definitely been in a part of projects where you're like, you know, you're kind of having to work during the project to like get everyone on board. And like, that is a tough sell. And it's a tough place to be in because, you know, you'll normally be the one that's putting in the, you know, just countless hours or whatever it is. And then so if you're doing that whilst also trying to sort of be like, hey, any chance I could get a little hand, you know, it can be it can be very, very tough. So I definitely agree with you there. It's a super important part of it. I guess my kind of follow up on the thing that I'm kind of thinking about now is just like, you know, now being in this industry, having, you know, worked on quite a few things and, you know, how have you seen the industry evolve? If you have seen it evolve, you know, maybe maybe it hasn't, but you know, what's your perspective been on the industry as a whole, and do you feel like it's sort of progressing and trending in the right direction, the wrong direction, or you know, just what's your sort of general vibe of the space as it is at the moment?
The easiest way to phrase it would be three steps forward, two steps back for the entire tenure of my time. It's constantly evolving and changing, but there are so many forces and don't necessarily want it to change in my opinion, what are progressive and positive ways, because that hurts their bottom line. And some of them are just racist. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
And they have enough power and influence to stop progress or at least slow it to a snail's pace. And the thing about it is there's not a lot of money in the RPG industry for small creative companies. There's not. It's if they can slow it enough, that allows other people that don't want certain things to happen to smother smaller companies until they go away. And then that tide that they'd started is gone. And things will flow back to how it was before until there's enough of an upheaval and someone else tries to rise up and do the same thing. It is very cyclical. And I've watched it occur over the past... Jesus, have I been in business almost a decade? Decade.
Well, congratulations on a pretty cool decade. Like,
nice. Sure.
Good, amazing.
Sorry you've had to witness that, but yes, otherwise, great.
I would say for the short time that we have been in the industry, the biggest change I think has been, at least for me, has been the number of people of color who are present and prominent, I think.
Yeah.
Like when we started their... It seems like there were some people who were already involved, but it seems like over the past couple of years, they have only become increasingly prominent. And there have been many, many more faces and voices that have appeared during that time and have gained some level of popularity. And so that has been the biggest change that I've seen. But in terms of the actual way the industry is run, I would have to really agree with you. Thankfully the faces of the people of color don't seem to be showing up and then vanishing all the time. It doesn't feel like a three steps forward, two steps back in terms of the number, but in terms of the actual way that the industry is functioning, we've talked about it on this show numerous times in various areas, whether it be in TV. I know we talked about some of the backlash that Rings of Power had gotten. We talked about, we've talked about the D&D, the issues with D&D, and how they have, it has been a real struggle for them to try and progress with their lore and how they depict things. Most recently, Baldur's Gate 3 coming out, and how that game seems to like just completely bring back all of that old stuff that D&D as a brand had been shifting away from. Different things like that. It really does feel like a struggle, even though it does feel like it's inching in a positive direction overall.
Yeah.
But the problem is that inching takes so long, you've lost so many other voices. And I love that there are more people of color that were seeing and are out doing things. I want those people of color to publish more books. I want them to make more games. Because it is great. How can I say this properly? Because I'm in full support of everything that's happening and all the actual plays and all that is amazing. And it's great. It's getting them fans. But in 1 year from today, if you make an actual play, even when we started, you all didn't know I listened to your actual play. It was great. I want you to do more actual plays. But if you put out a book in addition to the actual play, people can still go back to that book that you made with your faces and your name on it. In a year, in 10 years, in 20 years.
Yeah.
And that is something that's always there. The video is always there, but graphics will change. Things will be updated like that. So there's the balance isn't right, is what I guess what I'm saying.
I wonder if there's anything that you might say, or either as advice or as a you know, even just a thought on, like, you know, someone who is looking into making a book or publishing something, you know, like where that might go. Because I think that from my own perspective, you know, a podcast, the show, actual play feels so infinitely more accessible than, you know, like getting a book to print, or, you know, and it's not something that I've had experience with. And it's, you know, definitely something where
daunting.
I've I've sort of started to get to the point where, you know, I think, and we've started to get to the point as a show, and I think, you know, the other two probably can attest to this, where like people are now sort of maybe asking us, you know, like, oh, do you, you know, would you want to be involved in this project, or would you want to write on this, or would you want to make something of your own? And we're sort of we're kind of getting there, but I think mostly because people are coming to us now. Yeah. But I'm aware that that's sort of like a privilege that a lot of people within the industry don't have. And so I'm wondering if there's anything that, you know, from your perspective that you kind of, you know, is there any resources or anything that you're kind of seeing out there that you think, wow, people need to be using this or talking to these people or, you know, whatever it may be?
I would love to tell you that I do, but I don't. I did it the hard way. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. So I tried, failed, succeeded, failed, succeeded. And there would be people that are more ingrained in the industry than what I am, because part of the success of Harlem Unbound and Haunted West being fantastic have closed more doors than they've opened for me as a creative.
Really?
Oh, how so?
We're on the same page again.
We're the same. We're the same, Jeremy.
I'm telling stories that have truth and on topics that are difficult that people don't want to engage with. So they're the fans that don't want to do it, but they're also the company people that will now not really talk to me. They definitely won't hire me. And because they think that I'm going to come into their space and voice these opinions and try to help rectify their problems. And you know what? They're right. I would. You invite me in there. I'm going to help. I'm going to try to help you clean your house. But so that has closed a lot of doors. So I don't necessarily have the same access other people would. So if you're going to put out a passion project, I would say be sure that you're ready for the positives and negatives or whatever those things are.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's not funny anymore. As well. I apologize.
No. Like, this is good. This is great. This is exactly what the kind of conversations that we want to be having.
This is the podcast. It's like, you know, we'll be funny, but then we'll get real with you and you have to deal with it.
And then we snap at the end.
Exactly. Lots of snaps. As Jess was saying, like, it's really nice to see that there are more opportunities like coming our way. But I every single time it does happen, and I noticed this with you, Jasper and Jeremy as well, we're always like, really? Okay. Gosh. All right. Sure. We're still not used to like, I don't know. I feel like there's just a constant like being a person of color in a space and then just feeling so like honored if something comes your way, and even though it, like, you know,
as opposed to like feeling like, oh yeah, I've earned this, okay, cool, yeah, great, let's have a conversation. Yeah, absolutely. And I think if anything, that's the thing that feels disappointing from an industry point of view, and definitely the thing that, you know, I'm currently in, you know, doing and making plans to do at the moment. It's just like, you know, the accessibility of opportunity, I think, is just like, it just doesn't really exist. There's not really a framework, right? Because the industry is, as a whole, is probably really, there's like 2 to 3 kind of big players, and then everyone else is sort of like, you know, working with like money, but not like, you know, the kind of money where you can make change, you know? And so I do think that like creating a network for opportunity is something that like, you know, needs to happen. I think it exists in other industries, and I think it has had yielded kind of really fruitful results, but it's just something that we don't currently have. And I, you know, very aware of the fact that like you said, Liv, it's like, you know, when we get opportunities, I sort of like, slightly like flinch, where I'm like, oh god, really?
What's
sure,
the catch?
Like
the catch?
Me, because I, because also partly because like I know, you know, there's X amount of incredibly talented people, you know, who I know, and I'm like, oh, they'd probably be better, and so I'm like, oh, I kind of want to bring them through, and so I think it's a tricky thing to negotiate, but I completely agree with you that like there is something about the, you know, whether it be like publishing or like other areas where I think we need to see more prominence from people of color and minority groups. Absolutely. Because I think, you're absolutely right. In terms of actual play and everything, I think there's a, you know, we're getting to a point where there's nowhere near, you know, any kind of equality or anything. No. But like, we're getting to a point where like, oh yeah, there's like, we're getting some really like incredible prominent people who are doing absolutely amazing work, who are, you know, popping up on your Google searches as frequently as, you know, your Matt Mercers or your Brennan Lee Mulligans or whatever, which is, I think, great. But I definitely think that, you know, I feel like at the moment the TTRPG industry is Green Book getting on stage to accept their Oscar. You know what I mean? It's like Mahershala Ali stood there and you're like, oh yeah, there he is. And then behind him is just like a sea of white producers. like, I feel like that's definitely the bit that's got to change next us to kind of usher in the next era of the space. My next thing, I guess, would be, is there anything, and you could absolutely say no, is there anything that you're kind of like...
One thing before we move on. I will say that I've heard fantastic things about Big Bad Con. So if you have a chance to go,
you should definitely go network and
do the thing. Mm.
Yes, so that's a very good point. I probably should have brought up Big Bad Con because I've had the pleasure of going 2 years in a row. The first year I went out as a POC scholar, so they paid for my flight to go out and my hotel room and everything. And it was honestly life-changing. Like, I've had by far the most successful career year of my life. And I wouldn't attribute this just to Big Bad Con in the sense that I don't want to, you know, anyone out there to get some sort of sense of false hope that, like, you'll go to Big Bad Con and then you'll be like, you know, get up all of the success or whatever. But I definitely think that, like, it is probably the closest thing to a real kind of like industry meet for everyone who's on that kind of like, you know, anyone who's on that kind of like lower rung who genuinely like with people who can help you, with people who can bring you up. And I just think there's you're going to get another opportunity like that within TTRPGs, because most of the time, if you're going to a convention, like, you know, Chris Spivey's doing signings and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you can't run up to Chris and be like, yo, can I grab you for like a, you know, proper 15-minute chat, and like where you're not exhausted and, you know, whatever else. Whereas Big Bad Con really prioritizes making space for that. Which I think is really, really important, because, you know, other conventions and other places where you might bump into these people just might not be the most appropriate time to try and grab them for like a meeting powwow when they're like in between panels and they're, you know, they've got 10 minutes to eat their lunch, or they've, you know, they're exhausted because they've been on a plane for however many hours or whatever it is. And I think Big Bad does a really great job with that. So thank you for reminding me, Chris.
You'd be surprised.
So nice they prioritize as well. Oh,
go ahead, Chris, go on. You're going to be really pertinent. I'm going to be tangenting. So please.
Oh, no. Me? Oh, no, no, no.
Always. No. You're absolutely right. Always.
Okay. but yeah, it's just really nice that Big Bad Con like prioritizes like POC voices as well, because like you do get, because I go to a lot of cons with my job, and there are a lot of like panels that are like how to get into like voice acting, how to get into the industry, how to get into, you know, games and stuff like that. But it's, it resonated with me what you said, Chris, about like how, like, if you were invited into those spaces, you would be like, hey, clean up your act. Because I think that there is a lot of like fear of that. You know, there's a lot of a fear of being called out, you know, for not having certain things in place. Jasper, you're like nodding like, yeah.
Well, I just, you know, I'm just thinking furiously about the amount of times that we'll kind of like go to have a guest on the show or something, and be like, hey, cool, we're probably going to talk about diversity and stuff, just so you know, because it's a big part of, you know, the show and everything. And they're like, oh, well, you know, it's not that I don't want to talk about that. It's just like, you know, and it's like, hey, dude, like, chill.
With
like,
three black, you know what I mean? Halflings.
We're not trying to get you. We just want to hear your opinions.
But Jasper, I think what you're highlighting is the fact that the reason they get nervous is because they know, like, they're internally telling on themselves, saying, I could have done more. And to be honest, this hasn't really been that big of a priority for me in a lot of these areas. And I kind of recognize that that's not really great. And so, I'm not hostile. I'm not against it. So they're trying to like do it to communicate it in a way that's
do the
like,
math.
But I, you know, yeah, I care about it. Just like not enough to like have done it that like as much up until now. I care. It's sort of that. That's the vibe I get.
Only if one person did it. If more than one person did it, I'd have a problem probably. But like if someone came on and genuinely was just like, honestly, it just hasn't been a priority. I could have done more, and I will, you know, I'm going to try to do better. I'd respect that. I'd respect that more than someone coming on and being like, yeah, so I like have this black friend, and well, you know, I actually hired them to be my assistant one time.
Yeah,
you know,
like, the barista I met yesterday.
I said nice job, and I gave them a tip.
I think they may have been not white. They did mention they had seen my show. So, you know,
that's nice. I feel like I know that our whole thing here at Three Black Halflings is like, you know, being an approachable thing for people to like learn about how to like not just to learn how to be like, you know, not a better person, you know what I'm saying, just kind of like learn how to deal with those situations. So it's like
why I'm always surprised when people seem to have that reaction, because I'm very much like, of all of the shows that you're going to go on, we're going to dunk on you the least. Like we are actively just like, we just want to have a conversation, and usually it'll be kind of funny and silly. Like you could go on shows and they're going to try and get you, and they'll clip that shit and put it on like online. We're not going to do that. Like
our harshest interview that made ever was still criticized by some people for not being harsh enough. Like we are not.
We're
just a hard hitting show.
No, absolutely not. We're not in that. We're in for fluffy puff pieces only.
All right. We're getting hard hitting now. What is it? Pancakes or waffles? Which one?
Waffles, I think, for me.
Why? Why waffles? Why not pancakes?
Because waffles add a texture that I love, like a little crispiness to the waffle, like especially if you're having it with like an ice cream or a syrup or something, like, you know what I mean? Okay. I'm just saying, adding the crispiness is nice.
The duality pancakes, of pancakes, though, mushy. You know, it can be a sweet treat, it can be a savory treat. It's just, it's a good time. You
Do
know?
You I'll give salty you that. Pancakes, Liv?
Yeah, like with bacon and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, the pancakes themselves aren't salty.
No.
Yeah. As in like a sweet and savory blend thing. Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah, I would argue though, still, it's even better with waffles. Like what? Like waffles with golden syrup or like maple syrup and bacon. Oof.
But I have a counterpoint. The versatility of a pancake. Mm-hmm. See, if it's just a plain waffle versus a plain pancake, I definitely lean waffle. But the problem is pancakes, you can put things in pancakes. Pancakes can have fruit in them. They can have other items in them.
Fruit.
If you want to, you could put something salty inside of the pancake and have yourself like, okay, we have chicken and waffles, right? What if you put the chicken in the pancake? Right?
But you can also sandwich chicken in between two waffles. I've had that and it's spectacular.
But, then also on the versatility of the pancake, there is also like the American fluffy pancake versus like a crepe. There's so much going on there, you know?
But I would say that's just not a pancake. Yeah, that's not just a difference.
How dare you say that to
me? Are you ready?
I'm going to come.
Are you ready for the switch now? Like the part that gets you. We're going to switch it up.
Yeah.
Why do you waste so much of your life thinking about pancakes and waffles? Why? Tell me right now.
Okay. Chris, listen, I could have done better. I could have done better. And it hasn't really been a priority for me to think less about pancakes and waffles. So I guess I'm just, Chris, I'm sorry. I'm going to do better in the future.
This is a frivolous show. We are frivolous, unserious people.
I shouldn't have come on to the pancake and waffles
is hard-hitting.
Podcast.
Hard-hitting.
We are fundamentally flimsy human beings, Chris. We have no substance.
This is us. We just sit here and wait until the show starts again.
It's happening.
It's happening. It's all right.
We are actually cardboard cutouts, honestly, of humans. No one should be scared of us. We blow over in the wind. Chris, first of all, you have to answer. I want a straight answer, no fluff. This is hard-hitting journalism right now.
Yeah.
Pancakes or waffles, and what's your topping? Go.
Waffles, because my daughter insists on having my wife make fresh waffles every Saturday, which never happens except for once every 6 months. And bourbon maple syrup with a side of crispy bacon that is so crispy it bricks in your hand if you don't pick it up right.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, I'm down. I'm down for that. Bourbon anything, honestly. The amount of, like, bourbon, like, hickory smoke, like, barbecue sauce that's got bourbon in it. Like, bourbon in anything. I'm like, yeah, let's go.
Pop bourbon into anything, it elevates it. It's wild.
Elevates it. Coffee in the morning, bourbon. Let's go.
It's fine.
Bourbon pancakes? Sounds good. Put in the pancake mix.
Put in the pancakes.
I won't lie. There may have been a few times where I was behind on deadlines and it was 11 o'clock at night and I had coffee with a shot of bourbon in it.
Hey!
Oh yeah, that's like I run a lot of games for people based in America, and I play a lot of games with people that are based over in America. That is like a staple go-to for me. It's like what I'll usually do is like I'll have a coffee about midnight. Let's say I'm doing a show at 1. Coffee at midnight, and then I'll have a drink around 3 a.m. because then that way it'll counteract the coffee and I'll actually be able to sleep.
Yep.
Because otherwise I'll finish the show at like 4 in the morning and you're wired. I'm wired because I just had like 2 coffees. So you gotta go for the bourbon.
And all these emotional experiences too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like a big old come down. But yeah, definitely watch me towards some of the end of some streams that are still floating around on the internet, and I get real unserious.
Bourbon tikka masala.
I get loopy. Yeah.
Bourbon tikka masala. Okay, that is actively gross.
Yeah.
Really, is that good?
That's really actually quite bad. Yeah.
It's just chicken tikka masala, but no chicken. You just pour bourbon into it.
Just pour bourbon over chicken.
It's all the same spices, sauces.
You just brine chicken in bourbon.
No, there's no chicken.
part of me does want to try that, but mm-hmm. I don't think I hate myself enough to do that.
It's also a drink. Like it comes in a glass. Yeah. So
it's just got raw chicken in it. No,
it's got no chicken.
That's what I'm saying. You brine chicken.
It's vegetarian.
Yuck. Okay.
It's vegan.
Listen, before this hard-hitting journalism gets any more hard-hitting, because I don't think I can take it anymore.
My arteries,
Chris,
have hardened.
We have to ask you. Zach, my arteries have hardened during the course of this conversation.
Yeah.
It's
we have
not
that effect on people, yeah.
But we have to ask you before we let you go, because this is an absolute a staple of Three Black Halflings, and every single person that comes on the show has to answer this question, which is, we ask you for a tale from the table. So this is basically something that has happened at a table that you've been that you played at. This can be something from one of like your own games that you've designed. This can be something from, you know, can be anything you want. Just something that's like memorable. It can be fun, sad, transcendent.
Do you want cry. Do you want a funny story or an upsetting story? Which one would you like?
I mean, if we have time, I'll take both. I don't know.
Yeah, let's take both. Let's go.
Upset
let's go
me, then make me laugh.
And then make me laugh, and we'll wrap this sucker up. Let's do it.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
As you know, I am a known horror writer. It's my thing. It's my shtick. I love Cthulhu. I love Vampire. The game I have run more than any other game in existence, Star Wars. Because, you know, of course you'd have me run Star Wars.
Nice.
And so I was running my umpteenth Star Wars game. This was in the Saga Edition that came out. And it was an ongoing campaign. And I'd pulled people together from the internet because I was had moved around so much. And it was an apartment in Virginia. Mm. And it was a group of about five people. And so we're playing the game. And it was like at a high moment. They had some bad rolls. And like the Sith that they were chasing escaped into the ether. Like force lightning some people. But I didn't kill them. And they were upset because they rolled some really bad stuff. And a couple, because there was a couple that were together, they sort of stepped aside to the kitchen for something. And I was walking by and they called me the N-word. They didn't know I heard them. They called me the N-word in my apartment, in my home.
And what the fuck? Sorry, I was not expecting that.
Why?
What?
They rolled bad, and the bad guy in a game got away. There you go. Oh. I asked you what a happy or upsetting. And so
that is upsetting. That's did you confront them?
I heard. I went back to the table. I let everybody come back to the table, sit down. They pick up their dice. And then I looked through them and I said, get the fuck out of my apartment, you racist pieces of shit.
Yes!
You don't say the N-word about me in my house or to anyone. And I kicked them out.
No.
And I did it for the whole table to see. So I could get maximum shaming.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
Wow.
There's backpedaling.
Not that it makes a difference, but like hard R or like what was the deal?
Like, that sounds like a hard R situation.
It was a hard R.
It sounds like a hard R.
It was a hard R.
Yeah.
So for maximum shaming for everyone, and they tried to like backpedal it, and they're like, well, we didn't.
No.
Mm-hmm. We didn't want, we didn't, you didn't mean it? What the fuck? Get out of my house. No, get out now. Get
out. These were not black people, right?
Oh, no, they were not.
Yeah.
I would be like, oh, please follow me upstairs and I'll show you out. And then I push them out of the window upstairs. Yeah. And then they go out that way.
Yeah. And part of it I account to, I generally try to be a nice person. And people take that niceness for weakness.
Mm. Uh-huh. But like, that's a nut hole. Yeah.
There's out of pocket and then there's in the next county. And those those people crawled out of the pocket and hopped in a taxi.
They got on a Boeing 747, my dude.
The pocket was in another dimension.
Left. They left. Oh my god.
How long ago was this as well, Chris? Like, once again, doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, could we find them? Because are they still there?
Hunt them down.
Before I got married, I was recently back from Iraq. I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe 20. I'm an old fogey, so you have to take into account.
No, like that's still the 2000s. That's fucking wild.
It's wild. Ooh. It's absolutely wild.
It was probably
wild.
Around
2008,
I think, maybe 09.
Oh yeah, about 15 years ago.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's hope they've learned over the past 15 years.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. If you're willing to say it in my house,
it'd be pretty wild if you didn't, to be honest.
I know this is ridiculous. This is a ridiculous thing to get hung up on. But like the be it in your house. Like that's I'm like,
that's not ridiculous at all.
The level of violation.
Yeah, it makes
just
me feel
I'm
dirty,
like
the idea
on the street, I'd be angry. But in my house?
Yeah.
Like, I would have to like power wash the entire place.
Honestly, I'd be like sending them a bill for the fucking oxygen they consumed in my presence. Do you know what I mean? Jeez. Oh man. Yeah. Yuck. Ooh. Absolutely yuck. Well, Chris, why don't you make us laugh now with the funny tale from the table?
Two shorter quick stories in for you. The first one happened about 2 weeks ago. So this goes back to the D&D movie that I will say I think the D&D movie was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
My daughter loved it.
We enjoyed it.
It would get people in. It was high budget.
Had a pretty good time.
There'll never be a high budget D&D movie again now. So she saw it. She fell in love with it. So she wants me to run D&D because I've run her on some random little one shots by herself. She's all of 9 going on 18 right now. And so I got together with some of the parents and the kids all came over and I ran my first ever full-blown kids D&D game. It was like 5 kids, me, and a fellow parent sort of like help move stuff along for about 3 hours.
Wrangle this.
Yeah.
And I got to watch my daughter light up as her best friend, who was shy for the first 20 minutes, opened up in a way that I had never seen her do, and she got into it. The other kids got into it, and they asked me to turn the game into a full-blown campaign.
Oh, like
that.
That's beautiful.
That's who I want to be for, like, my kids. Just like, hey, you can invite your friends over, and we'll get snacks, and then we can play D&D and whatever. It'll be great. Ah,
so lovely.
Part of me was waiting for it, and then they called another... the hard R.
And they dropped the hard R.
She's not friends with that child anymore.
Came out of their shell too much, some would say. Like, too far out of the shell.
Saw something I've never seen before.
Hey, a shorter one is I ran a lot of Vampire World of Darkness in college, and one of my favorite ones is when I had running a Vampire Dark Ages game. There were 16 players. I got to be on the second floor GMing down to people like I was a preacher preaching at them. And they play it for like 6 hours.
Wow.
That's great.
That's pretty sick. That's pretty sick. Well,
no, we will not try again.
No, we can't try again. I don't know who that was. Was that?
Was that Alexa?
That was. Yeah, I think that was an Alexa, I think.
Siri?
Or a Siri, potentially.
It was an A, trust me. I know. It's over there.
Okay.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Clark Spivey, for coming on.
Yeah.
Can't tell you how much we appreciate you giving us your time. Please let everyone know where they can find you on the internet and obviously all of the epic things that you've been working on.
Thanks for having me. You'll be surprised that I rarely get invites to do podcasts. So I was excited for the offer. And you can see how easy it is to get me to come onto a podcast as we scheduled this, I think, 12 months ago. If you're looking for me, the best place to find me is in the Darker Hue Discord. You'll see me posting a bunch of memes, talking about musicals, and dropping a lot of history stuff that is boring to everyone else but interesting for me. If you want to get some of my work, you can buy, I think there's 100 copies of Haunted West left that IPR has. Chaosium, after the first edition of Haunted West, won 3 Gold Innies, a bunch of awards, was put in museums. Mm-hmm. And I did all the hard work, came out and offered to publish the second edition for me. And the second edition, we improved. I got in some new people, and I'm incredibly happy with it, which you can buy from Chaosium's website. Otherwise, I'm just hiding from people.
Mm. That's fair. I have to ask you, Chris, though, what is your favorite musical of all time?
Yes, I was going to. Jeremy with the same.
We have melded.
Truly. We're two black halflings now because apparently my co-workers have decided to meld into one.
Sorry.
So helpful, guys.
Cognity.
Well, Jasper, we could start our own podcast. I don't know what it'd be about. Maybe.
Yeah, let's do it.
You know what?
Let's do it.
It'll be a podcast about Alan Cumming. That's all we talk about the whole time.
I'm down. I'm so down. Let's do it. The Cummings cast. Let's go.
Cummings cast.
I feel like people think it needs an explicit rating.
No, not going to get confused with anything else. It'll be fine. Favorite musical, Chris, let's go.
Or if you do hard-hitting questions, you can call it Cumming Hard.
Oh, God.
Ah, terrible. Yeah, that's bad. That makes me feel uncomfortable. That's just not even his name now.
Cumming Hard.
That's not even his name now.
No.
wonderful.
Oh.
Growing up, The Man of La Mancha. As an adult, Company by Sondheim. I fell in love with Sondheim the older I got, and Sondheim all the way. But now I have to ask, what is your favorite musicals?
I know mine.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, Liv, you want to go first?
Oh, sure. Legally Blonde, the musical.
Yeah.
it's more modern, but like everything about it hits just right for me. It's just it's for me, you know? It's for me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Nice. Mine, I will first, before I say anything, I must ask, have you seen the production of Company that they just did a couple years ago in the UK?
I've not seen that one yet.
I think it did cross over to the US. I think it did go to Broadway, transferred, I believe.
I think it did go to Broadway. Yeah,
it starred Rosalie Craig, Patti LuPone. I think Ashley Campbell was in the cast. I only know Ashley Campbell because I met him after that, like at an audition. It was really weird. I'm friends with him on Facebook. But anyway, it was like, it was a really good, really, they actually gender swapped almost all of the roles.
I
know.
So I want to see it. Because I'm really familiar with the role, really Espalza one, the one that Neil Patrick Harris did, and some other version, and the one that I forgot his name, but he was, I want to say, the lead in Hustle. did one too that's from like the 80s or 90s. And we went to the Broadway Museum. I had my picture taken for the Sondheim exhibit. But I was saying...
Adrian Lester was in one, I think.
Yes.
As well. Yeah. Was that the one?
That's the one I was thinking of. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. We got a, yeah, we got a black Bobby in that one. My favorite musical of all time is West Side Story.
Okay. Classic.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Just, I think the music is incredible. The dancing is great. Lyrics are solid. I mean, Baby Sondheim did a great job. Yeah, that musical is fantastic.
I'm trying to think what would I probably, the first thing that's coming to my head is, I love Sweeney Todd. I saw Michael Ball and Imelda Staunton do Sweeney Todd, and it changed my whole life. Like, it was like Imelda Staunton as Miss Lovett was just like, mind bogglingly good. So I think, I'm probably gonna go with Sweeney Todd. Honestly, I love that. I love that show so much. And
the amount of like depth you can go into with Sweeney Todd. I've watched so many lore videos on just how Sweeney Todd was made. So good.
Yeah, awesome. It's a great production. Love seeing it live. I sit there every production. I sit there and go, how are they going to do the chair? How are they going to do it in this one? You know what I mean? Like, it's great. So yeah, I'm probably going to go with that one. Well, thank you so much. Jeremy, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, JeremyCobb1, Cobb with two Bs, number one, also on Blue Sky. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/CasualQuestLive. For things that I'm in, you can see Project Marana on Roll For It's Twitch. Shows on Thursdays. I've never gotten the time right once, but go to the Roll For It Twitter, and then you'll be able to see the schedule of the show. But it's Call of Cthulhu game, actually, in which I play a sad gay hockey player. And then you can also catch me on the Quantum Reactor. That's the Quantum Reactor, wherever pods are cast. Sci-fi movie review show. It's fun.
You can find me. I'm like on every social media as either at Dust Dark Magic or at Olivia Does Dark Magic. So sorry, I was about to be like, figure it out. No. Figure it out. No, you can please put the like.
Don't make Liv educate you. Don't make Liv do all that labor of educating you about where to find her. Do the work.
I love God. But also, I don't know when this episode is coming out. However, if it is before Friday the 27th of October, and you're going to be at MCM London, you can see me and also Jasper and also Jess Jewell and Sharmini Bundell, friend of the show, Mark Humes, Johnny Chiodini, all wonderful people that we think are super neat. And we're going to be in a UK, the Rising Stars, that's a different one on Saturday. Go see that as well. The biggest names in UK TTRPG. So we're going to be playing some D&D, and Mark Humes is going to be DMing it, and you should check it out, and we'll let you know where if it's on the internet afterwards. It should be. So yeah, come to MCM. See you. Thanks.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.